Of you here, if you're visiting with us, we want you to know you're our honored guest, and if there's anything we can do to help you, please let us know. You know, last week was mine and Leah's first vacation Bible school, and I would have loved to have worn my Woody costume up here for all of you, but I felt it was time to retire that thing and put it away. We fell in love with the congregation all over again, watching each of you step up and volunteer and put on this vacation Bible school. The work that goes into it is truly, truly amazing, and the talent at this congregation is amazing. By the fourth night, my brain was done. I couldn't remember anything I was supposed to do. But we appreciate everyone who baked a cookie, who led the kids around the building. Everything seemed seamless, and it was wonderful. You know, today is a special day for many of us, as it is Father's Day, and I hope that many of you had the chance to spend time with your fathers. Maybe you went and had a barbecue or cooked out or just ate together and got to celebrate with your dad. For others, this day can be a difficult day. Maybe you never had that wonderful relationship with your father. Maybe your father has already passed on. But I believe in the importance of fathers, and I believe in a day that celebrates those dads. I believe we should do it. But let's also be looking out for those who are hurting, those who days like this or Mother's Day are a hurtful day. You know, Leah and I have yet to become parents. We like to pretend we're parents because we have a golden doodle. That doesn't quite work. However, we are about to start foster classes. We begin this Tuesday a 10-week process, learning all about the foster care system. And by August, we should have a placement with a child or two children that we will be their foster parents for. And I say that not to say, look at us, look at what we're doing, but I say that because this church family right here is how we're going to get through that. Because one day we will be the two of us, the next day we will be either three or four of us, and we have never parented a child. We have kept your children alive, but we have never parented our own. And so we ask that you please, please, please be praying for us. There will be things we need that we don't even know we need right now. And we know that we can rely on this church family. You know, our parents play a huge role in influencing our lives. We are largely who we are because of our upbringing that our parents gave us. And each person in this room has an attachment to their primary caregiver. That attachment could be good or bad. In the counseling world, we would say that could be secure or unsecure. It could be healthy or it could be unhealthy. And whether you like it or not, there's some form of attachment that you have towards your parents. The good news is that attachment is not put in stone. It's not steadfast. It can change over time as you continue to connect with other people. But for most of us, the way that we have our attachment is largely based on the way that our parents raised us. This is that deep emotional bond that connects one person to another. And research has long been conducted on the study of the bond between parents, as well as on into your adult relationships. Although it's greatly influenced by our parents, again, it's not set in stone, and over time it can change based on the people around you. It's like a dance that happens repeatedly throughout the day, especially when considering that relationship between the child and his father or mother. And this attachment is seen in how we handle distressed and challenging moments in our life. For example, if you have ever taken a toddler to the playground, you set the toddler down and you prepare to go sit on a bench. And that little girl, two or three, will take a few steps and she'll turn around and make eye contact with her mom. And that mom will give that acknowledging smile, a little sparkle in her eye, and now the little girl knows, oh, I can take a few more steps. And she'll take three or four more steps, and she'll stop, she'll turn around, make eye contact with the mom. And if the mom gives, you know, some kind of signal, like, keep going, before you know it, the child is up on the slide. But then all of a sudden, she's standing on the slide, the little girl, and she's scared. Who does she turn to? In that moment of distress, who does she look to? She looks right back to the parents. And in that moment, she may be signaling, come help me, I'm frozen, I'm stuck. And an in-tune parent will go to the slide and encourage the child to come down. Or the boy who's at the baseball park and he's getting ready to bat. He swings and misses, it's a strike. He can hear his dad saying, keep the eye on the ball. He will turn, probably look at his dad. Keep the eye on the ball, son, you got this, son, you can do it. Swings again and misses. He can hear his father, you've got it, son, patience, be ready. Eye on the ball. That is this circle of security that I have drawn out old school on this whiteboard. I'm sorry if you cannot read it. This is more of a reminder for me, not so much for y'all. There in the counseling world is this idea called the circle of security, which is this oval right here. These hands represent the parent who is telling the child that they can go out from their secure base, and when necessary, they can return to their safe haven. A child who is attached with their parent knows that I'm allowed to venture out and explore, and when needed, I can come back because you, mom and dad, you will be my safe haven. When I'm hurt, when I am scared, I can come back to you. When a parent and child are interacting, they are continuously moving around this circle. And when the child feels safe enough, they're allowed to explore. And through exploration, what the child is asking of their parents is, I want you to watch over me. I want you to see what I am doing. I think about when I am in the nursery with some of the little guys, they will run up to you, and doesn't matter what's in their hand, usually it's the pretend food, and they'll want to feed you, and you truly have to pretend like you're eating it. I've had a lot of that food been put up right by my mouth. They're so excited to show you, right? If you have been with any toddler, they're going to show you what I'm doing. They also want you to delight in me. Notice me. Show me that you love me. At times, they may be saying, help me. I need you. I need you to help me. And enjoy this moment with me. Kids know how to enjoy the moment. And so when they are out exploring, this is what they're needing. But inevitably, something is going to happen. They fall down, scrape their knee. A kid bullies them, or someone steps on them, or whatever happens, and they immediately look for care seeking so that they can return to their safe haven. And when they are returning to safe haven, the things they are needing are protect me, comfort me, organize my feelings, and delight in me. And did you catch that? In both being allowed to explore and being allowed to return to the parent, they always need delight. Delight is through the whole thing. Delight and look at what I'm doing. Look how amazing this is. Look how well I colored my piece of paper. And when I'm hurt, I still need you to delight in me so that you can comfort me. I need to know that you're the person who's going to hold me. It's in each and every one of us when we were children, and it's still in us today. You see the toddler who comes and puts out his hands and says, hold you, which is the sweetest thing to me. Because they need to be picked up. And we may not walk around saying, hold you, but there are plenty of moments where I have had to rely on Leah to get me through the day, or I've had to rely on someone in the office or you guys, because I know that I have this attachment to you people and to the Lord's church. The one key component of this circle in developing that secure attachment is that the quality of the relationship matters the most. Attachment will inevitably happen. Your parent could have been absent for all of your early stages of life, but there's still some form of attachment to that person. It's part of infant survival. It's how they are allowed to live, and it starts in the beginning. So again, parents are the hands of this circle, allowing the kid to go out and allowing the kid to come in. And ruptures happen. Bad things happen. Parent is oblivious to child falling down. But the beauty of a rupture is that you get to have a repair. It's better for the parent to have done something wrong so that they get to fix it than to have never have experienced that at all. And when focusing on the circle and when working with the kids here, I remind myself that children always need me to be bigger, stronger, wiser, and kind enough. When I was counseling, I was taught to view myself as a container. And I would tell the kids, I am bigger, stronger, kinder, and wise enough to hold anything you need me to hold. I'm bigger than you. It's just the way life is. I'm stronger than you. You're a little guy. But you can tell me anything. Whenever possible, I follow the child's need. And whenever necessary, I take charge. This is secure parenting. This is secure attachment. I don't step in when not needed. I don't do it for you. I step in when you need that bigger, stronger, wiser, and kind enough person. So whenever possible, I follow the child's need. So what is so important about all of this attachment junk? Is it just me standing here giving you psychobabble so I look really smart? No. Every time I would talk about attachment with parents, I kept coming back to how beautifully the circle depicts our relationship with God the Father. For some, that is going to be your closest concept of what a good, healthy father can be. And in attachment theory, there are 6 components of an attachment relationship, and they are as follows. This attachment must be persistent and ongoing. It's not a temporary thing. It has to be directed towards a specific person. It's emotionally significant. It's directed towards maintaining contact with that person. An attachment is characterized by the distress during involuntary periods of separation. When a family here, if they lose their child, that child should look for mama first. They shouldn't be looking for me first. I'm not their primary caregiver. That's when I know there's secure attachment. I'm not judging parenting here at all, just saying. And attachment is characterized by seeking security and comfort. We need that bigger, stronger, wiser, and kind enough person. So think of how God spoke in the Old Testament to Moses and Joshua. His commands for parents are found in Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 4 through 18. Listen as I read that to you. He says, Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 4 through 18. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. These commandments that I give you today are to be on your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road and when you lie down and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates. When the Lord your God brings you into the land he swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give you, a land with large, flourishing cities you did not build, houses filled with all kinds of good things you did not provide, wells you did not dig, and vineyards and olive groves you did not plant, then when you eat and are satisfied, be careful that you do not forget the Lord who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. Fear the Lord your God, serve him only, and take your oaths in his name. Do not follow other gods, the gods of the people around you. For the Lord your God, who is among you, is a jealous God, and his anger will burn against you, and he will destroy you from the face of the land. Do not put the Lord your God to the test as you did at Massah. Be sure to keep the commands of the Lord your God and the stipulations and decrees he has given you. Do what is right and good in the Lord's sight, so that it may go well with you, and you may go in and take over the good land the Lord promised an oath to your ancestors. In this passage, did you see the persistence of teaching this? Did you see God saying, know me, your attachment is to me. Don't forget all the stuff I did to you. I'm going to allow you to go out and explore this new land. And there's going to be a lot of things around you. There's going to be cities you didn't build. There's wells you didn't dig. And remember me. And when you have trouble, I'm in your midst. And you're going to be able to come back to me. That's what he's saying to these people. And time again, we see how the Israelites moved through the circle. Now, in a biblical sense, what happens with us as humans is we sin. And we are the ones who rupture this circle. As soon as we have sinned, as soon as we have done something wrong, we have broken that attachment to God. God has done nothing to break that attachment. But what he is telling us is you can come back to me. I still delight in you, not sin, in you. And there's nothing you can do that would keep me from wanting you back. You know, and then again, in the New Testament, for us in Matthew chapter 28, verses 18 and 20, we have the Great Commission where Jesus states, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. And surely I am with you always to the very end of the age. Do you see the attachment language there? Go. Go explore. I'm your secure base. Go from me, because other people need to know who I am. And I am with you always. How powerful is that? To know that my Father is with me, telling me to go out. And when I need to be comforted, when I need help, he's right there with me. One of the best stories that depicts secure attachment to me is found in Luke chapter 15. And you know the story well. These are the three parables of something being lost. I find it interesting, though, to look at it from this attachment lens. In Luke chapter 15, it opens with Jesus eating with tax collectors and sinners, and the Pharisees and the teachers of the law are over there murmuring and complaining, saying, "Look at Jesus, why is he eating with these sinners?" And so Jesus begins to teach three parables about something being lost. First, we have the parable of the sheep. One out of 100 is lost, and the shepherd goes after it. And when the sheep is back, there is much rejoicing. Then we move to 1 out of 10. One coin in the lady's house has gone missing, and she searches her house diligently until she finds her lost coin. And upon finding the coin, she again rejoices. And then finally, we come to the parable of the lost son. The stakes seem to grow higher with each parable. 1 out of 100, 1 out of 10, now 1 out of 2. And read with me as I begin in Luke chapter 15 in verse 11. While read it, think about this concept of attachment, of being able to go out and come back in. The concept of security and being able to explore and being able to be welcomed to a safe haven. Verse 11 reads, Jesus continued, "There was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, 'Father, give me my share of the estate.' So he divided his property between them. And not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in that whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed the pigs. And he longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. And when he came to his senses, he said, 'How many of my father's hired servants have food to spare? And here I am starving to death. I will set out and go back to my father and say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants.' So he got up and went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. The son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his servants, 'Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For the son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' And so they began to celebrate. Meanwhile, the older son was in the field. When he came near the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked him what was going on. 'Your brother has come,' he replied, 'and your father has killed the fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound.' The older brother became angry and refused to go in. So his father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered his father, 'Look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders. Yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours, who has squandered your property with prostitutes, comes home, you kill the fattened calf for him.' 'My son,' the father said, 'you are always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad, because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is now found.'" So in this parable, the young son asked for his portion of the inheritance so that he could go on this journey. It's an odd request, seeing as the father is still alive, and he would have received likely 1/3 of the portion, being a younger brother. And odds are people were kind of perking up their ears listening to this story, because in many of the Old Testament stories, when you hear of a younger brother, you think, oh, he's the good one, right? He's the hero. Isaac and Jacob, Jacob and Esau, you know, Jacob taking over, those kind of things. So it's like, oh, we're going to root for this younger brother. But then what we learn is that he doesn't do well with the money, right? But what we see is there had to have been some form of secure attachment there for the son to even go to his father and say, "I'd like my inheritance right now, please." And remember, the father is bigger, stronger, wiser, and kind enough to say no to him, but instead says yes and gives him his portion. So at this point, nothing is really happening that's wrong, except the son has been set up to go explore, meaning he has a secure base with his father, meaning there is some form of attachment there. That's a good thing. But then what happens, and what happens to many of us, is that this exploration leads to worldly things. And the Son separates himself from the Father. Sin gets involved, and he is broken off. God has not made us to be robotic creatures who automatically praise and delight in him. God has made us that we willfully want to delight in him, and God delights in the fact that we delight in him. The circle continues and continues. But at this moment in the story, the son has now lost all of his money, squandered his possessions, and he's attached himself now to another man in this foreign country. And I find it interesting that when we've stepped that far into sin, we basically lose our senses, because we lose our sense of direction and our sense of who is the most important. He's now on the ground trying to feed pigs and eat anything left over. But then he comes to his senses and thinks, my father, surely he would hire me as just a servant, because they're even treated better than I'm being treated right now. So he's cut off himself from God, and that's how we would view it now, from his father. He's no longer safe. He's no longer being nurtured. He's no longer in a secure relationship. It is broken. But as mentioned earlier, ruptures are bound to happen, but beauty comes in repair. In our attachment to God, he is always steadfast. He's always patient, but he's always firm. He will never break this attachment. Our sin is what separates us from God. So the son decides to go back to the father, and we're now on our bottom half of the circle. He is looking for his safe haven. If only to be a servant, he is looking for a place where he is safe. Yet we learn that the father has been waiting on him. The father delights in his return. And when the son comes back, the father throws this huge feast with the fattened calf. And here we get to meet that older brother. He has stayed connected the entire time, so he thinks. Yet, in his own way, he's unattached. He is that self-righteous person that says, I've been with you the whole time. I've checked every box off that you've told me to do, and yet missing the point completely. Because every one of us in this room has ruptured our attachment to God, every single person. But beauty is in the repair, because God always delights in us. Here, Jesus is basically slamming these Pharisees for not seeing the importance of celebrating the sinner's return. And the father explains that what was lost is now found, and we have reason to celebrate. The father delights in us. He longs for us to be with him and for us to have a relationship with him. But a relationship with God does not happen overnight. Your attachment to your parent did not happen overnight. Your mom picked you up and she goo-goo-gooed, and you goo-goo-gooed back at her, and the smiles began. A relationship with God takes us working. It takes you diligently being willing to read what he has given us. It takes you talking to him. God has done his part, and he's all ready to delight in us on both sides of the circle. So spend time in his word. Pray. Talk to him, because he's always ready. We sometimes feel that we have moved too far from God and that he no longer wants us. Remember, he delights in you, and he delights in your return. Tonight, if you have fallen away or have yet to choose God as your secure father, why not make your time tonight to connect with him again? If there's anything we can do, please come as we stand and sing.